south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started.
Now, I get emails from exercise enthusiasts all the time asking me if they can jog, bike, power walk, mountain climb, or do any kind of outdoor exercise in Latin America safely and conveniently, like they can do in the U.S. on some of the roads and trails and wide open spaces outdoors. Yeah, I guess if you're up in the States in the boonies or in a smaller, medium-sized town, you can jog or bike safely pretty much anywhere. So I've heard, but I could be wrong. And I'm sure I'll get a few emails from people putting me straight on that. And to answer those questions concerning Latin America, I'd have to say, yes, people do it all the time, and no, they're not too smart about it when they do, not generally. You do see lots of brave souls running and jogging and biking. And the reason why I call them brave souls is because most of the time you see these guys running and jogging and power walking on the sides of busy highways with the usual crazy Latin American drivers just whipping by and blowing clouds of smoke in your face. Not to mention there's always those chicken bus death traps that whiz by and then stop and pull over to pick up people, always packed to the gills with passengers and people hanging out the windows and doors wide open. Not to mention, since basically you have the lowest classes of people riding those chicken buses, they're always throwing cups and plastic and garbage out the window, and if you're jogging alongside, you just might get beaned by an apple core or an avocado pit or worse. But I guarantee you this, you won't get beaten by an empty Starbucks cup because no one riding the chicken bus can afford a Frappuccino. And if they could, they'd have their own cars. And, you know, every time I see one of these crazy-ass joggers puffing away in the madness of the big city, I'm thinking they're better off sitting on the couch back home sucking down a bag of Doritos. That way you have your choice between colon cancer and lung cancer, you know? Though I have to say, there are a lot of nice, safe, small country roads and laid-back nice subdivisions where people do jog, run, and bike together. But being that this is Latin America, there really are some strange goings-on in the world of outdoor exercise. For one thing, you can be sure that only the upper classes and the very wealthy are actually getting out on the road and doing any kind of outside exercise at all. And how can you tell that? Well, it's easy. Because you see, the vast majority of these guys and gals have all the right jogging and running paraphernalia. The same trendy stuff and brands serious upscale joggers have in Anaheim or Cleveland, where you live. Oh, and by the way, due to many listener requests in Cleveland, I promise I won't use the C word more than once a show, okay? I guess I'll have to find some other town to pick on, huh? Anyway, when you see hardcore joggers down here, and the guys and gals that are biking for exercise, well, they're all duded out with color-coded spandex outfits, with matching water bottles and helmets, and sometimes with built-in two-way radios. And it's a funny thing, you know, because you see people like that jogging and biking all over the place, yet you rarely ever hear of one being assaulted or robbed, even when so many folks jog in iffy neighborhoods. I guess that could be because there's very little demand for used, sweaty, spandex crotch huggers in the petty criminal community. I mean, what's a poor guy do with that stuff once he's stolen it? Who's gonna buy it? I think it all goes back to Adam Smith, really. He would have said, in that case, there's a ton of supply but zero demand. And at least the joggers I know are smart enough not to carry any real valuables on them, like watches or jewelry or wallets. Now, that would really be asking for it, and crooks know that. Oh, and by the way, I do see a lot of joggers doing it all by their lonesome, men and women, which I think is kind of nuts in the big chaotic city, but they're doing it and getting away with it, and they're not getting mugged. So, go figure. And of course, Expat Eddie, who can't jog a block without hyperventilating since he smokes, he has a theory as to why joggers almost never get mugged. He says that joggers run all the time, and since it's their hobby, they can simply outrun and outmaneuver anyone who tries to screw with them. So crooks and thieves just don't bother. Now, the funny thing is, you almost never see these guy and gal joggers and bicycle riders during the week. But they're out like clockwork on weekends. Nothing odd about that, you say, right? There's plenty of weekend warriors like that in the States. Well, I'll just bet you that your weekend warriors up there don't have bodyguards stationed nearby while they run. That's right, I said bodyguards. bodyguards in bulletproof black SUVs following him around, hanging back a half a block at 6 miles an hour while these pompous jerks they're supposed to be guarding, nearly all of them thieving politicians, jog through the streets in their $500 jogging outfits. And I'll tell you, when long-term expats see that, we just want to vomit on the jogger. And if you think about it, you got to wonder, why do these pompous assholes do that? Which doesn't seem to make sense at first. You'd think, with their kind of money, they could be jogging around in their own private gated community at will, completely out of view of the general public. But you see, that's just the point. They want you and I to see them. They want to show you how much money and power they have, because in Latin America, it's all about the show. It's all about your bodyguards and the type and class of your bodyguards and what they're wearing, and of course, the make and model of your SUV, or better yet, SUVs. All paid for or stolen from the public trough, of course. Now, used to be, a few years ago, Hummers were all the rage until their stupid, phallically challenged owners finally figured out there's no place to park a hideous monstrosity like that without risking a fender bender every time you entered a parking lot. Not to mention, garages are always a bit undersized here in Latin America, and a tank like a Hummer just doesn't fit. And of course now, Mercedes and Audi SUVs are all the rage with the phallically challenged, since they are a bit smaller and more maneuverable. Still, those greedy, thieving bastards are always looking to move up to a Porsche Cayenne, which down here is considered the tits of the Ritz. But back to that truly odd topic of joggers with bodyguards. Now, like I said, these guys have $500 stretch spandex jogging outfits too, with matching water bottles, of course. Oh, and let's not forget that expensive Swiss biometric wristwatch. Gotta have that, and you gotta let everybody know you've got it. Oh, and by the way, these pompous jerks with the bodyguards following them, they're not really in shape. They got the pot belly going, and they eat the pork and the bimbo bread, and the double frappuccinos, of course. For the majority of them, the jogging thing is just a show, too. I mean, after all, for upscale gringos, it's the thing to do, right? Even Bill Clinton used to do it, remember? With his bodyguards in tow. Then he'd head over to McDonald's for a junk food fix. Excellent role models, those Clintons, aren't they? I tell you, if you're in any big city in Latin America, if you're doing any kind of errand running or normal driving around, you're going to see the occasional bodyguard caravan of pompous jerks showing off their wealth and power and stupidity. So get used to it. But I bet if you're like me, you never will. And here's something funny. You know, I told you in a show a long time ago that expat Eddie always keeps a couple of eggs in an egg carton on the back seat of his car. And over the years, he's found dozens of non-gastronomic uses for them. Once, you know, and I'll never forget this, we're driving down a nice, quiet, tree-lined street, and from a couple of blocks away, we could see in the opposite direction two overweight joggers in very expensive jogging outfits, followed by an SUV bodyguard brigade. They were in the other lane across the boulevard coming right toward us. And just then, Eddie looked at me and said, "All right," and he slowed down and reached into the back seat of his car without even looking. He pulled out an egg and lobbed it underhand just as we were passing the joggers. And darn it, he missed, but he did nail his secondary target, the bodyguards in the SUV. Now, Eddie's reason for messing up their day was not at all to punish them for being pompous show-offs, which they were. But Eddie just doesn't have any patience for idiots who hold up traffic. And guess what? Anytime idiots like that are out on the road, going 5 or 6 miles an hour, clogging up a lane like that just to put on their show, well, that's when Eddie's road rage kicks in. So the fact is, Eddie would never think of doing anything like that to a normal jogger or biker just out on the road getting some exercise. But it's about the inconvenience caused by the idiot and his bodyguards going 6 miles an hour, impeding traffic and blocking the lane. Now, I've been in Eddie's car plenty of times when he's bitched about the very same thing. And I've heard his girlfriend lay into him about it. She says, "What are you taking it out on the bodyguards for? That's their job. They gotta eat too, you know." And Eddie knows she has a point, to which I've heard him say to her, "Listen, you're right. Next time I promise I'll have better aim. Practice makes perfect." Now I have to mention too that in upscale commercial centers and shopping malls, you'll find any number of specialty shops catering to mountain bikers and surfers and joggers and power walkers. You name the outdoor sport or exercise, and they've got specialty shops for them, just like they do up in the States. And they stock all the high-end products necessary to accomplish that sport in style. So yes, down here you can find and buy a $5,000 mountain bike if that's what you're into. And believe it or not, all throughout Latin America, especially near the bigger cities, they've got a pretty extensive racing car circuit. I'm talking stock cars to drag racers to high-powered go-karts. In fact, you name a brand of a high-performance car or even a car that we up north would laugh at as a high-performance vehicle like a Volkswagen Beetle or a British Mini or a Honda Civic. Well, they've got car clubs for all kinds of makes and models down here, even for cars that we'd consider a joke. And a lot of them even have their own racing circuit. And of course, it's more or less an upper middle class or rich man's game. Only about the top 2% of the population could afford to have a hobby like that. And yes, here I should mention, if you look at the classified ads in the newspaper, under the car section, you'll find that down here too, you can buy high performance modules and chips. All that aftermarket stuff for car freaks to pump more RPMs and horsepower out of your engine. So if that's your thing, they've got it all down here too. Oh, and by the way, in every country and every big city, you'll find antique car clubs. And they'll have their meetings and rallies and special events too. So for example, if you have an old 1963 Corvette or even a Corvair, well don't worry, there's a car club you can join so you can be with like-minded people. But let me just point one thing out here. In my past life, when I lived back in Chicago, I had two very, very nice classic cars myself. And I mean fully restored down to the corners in the trunk and the glove box and the chromed screw heads under the hood. Because, you know, that's what you do when you're into restoring old cars. I mean, your goal is to make them absolutely pristine, like brand new off the showroom floor. If you've got the time, the patience, and the money, of course. Well, I can tell you this. If you have an old car down here, like a 65 Mustang, for example, and you're in Buenos Aires and you join a Mustang club, and Buenos Aires is huge, so you'll have about 15 Mustang clubs to choose from. And one thing you'll notice on day one when you first meet up with those guys as they proudly show you their own beautiful Mustangs, well, you'll discover instantly, if you're anything like me, that your car is far and away the best of the bunch. Because you see, once again, Latins are just not into the details. Sure, their cars will look beautiful from a block away, but as you walk closer, you'll start seeing little things that you'd never let pass on your own car. And that's why when you're down here in Latin America, if you belong to one of those car clubs, you'll be the guy that wins all the prizes nearly all the time. And believe me, it won't take much effort. And it's something more than the gringo advantage, really. The difference between you and the rest of the guys in the club is that you probably did all your own grunt work and patiently restored your car step by step in your own garage. I mean, that's generally what classic car nuts do. I'm talking first world classic car buffs, that is. But down here in Latin America, like I said, it's a rich man's game. And again, 99% of these guys are weekend warriors. Guys with maids and gardeners and bodyguards who do all the dirty work for them. In fact, I don't think I've ever met a guy who's into classic cars down here who's ever even waxed his car himself. Much less did bodywork or took a transmission apart. God forbid you might break a fingernail. In fact, the whole classic car business down here is a lot like the Latin Harley-Davidson clubs that I spoke about on a past show a year or so ago. These wealthy guys buy nice bikes and they buy all the getup, the leather pants and the vest and the chrome buckles, belts and badges and stuff to try to buy the Harley mystique, you know? They look the part, but their leathers look way too clean, if you know what I mean. And their bikes are not part of their personas like they are with Harley drivers up north. If something goes wrong with it, they send it out to get it fixed or they buy a new one. They'd never work on it themselves. That's what you pay your gardener for, to wash and wax your hog. So bottom line, if you're into classic cars, if you really want to be the king of the hill, come on down to Latin America and exercise your gringo advantage in that department too. Only one caution here, and it's a big one. Like expat Eddie says, he was restoring a 1948 Lincoln Town Car up in the States. Though he never had enough money to finish it off to show quality, he's told me more than once that he'd never want to get into the classic car thing again down here because it would just disappoint him. He says, and he's right, that guys down here with classic cars have very low standards, and even the best of them wouldn't even be in the running in a real bona fide competition up in the States. But again, like Expat Eddie says, if the classic car thing is in your blood, oftentimes you really feel like jumping back into it, even though in the end it leaves you feeling kind of empty. So maybe you win first place in a car show down here and you continue to win. It's like being the smartest guy in a room full of morons. And how good does that make you feel? And yes, you can find a lot of very cool classic cars down here, in the papers, in car lots, in old barns, just like you find in the States, only a lot cheaper. But down here, until just the last few years, you just could not get original parts for old classic cars. For example, it would be virtually impossible to get a replacement bumper for a 56 Chevrolet Bel Air. And even though nowadays you can get all that stuff on the internet and have it shipped down, Latin classic car owners have found it's a lot less hassle, even though the results aren't nearly as good, to get one of the local machine shop guys to fabricate a part for you down here, instead of spending the money and actually ordering an original part from one of the big car parts catalogs up in the States, like Hemmings or J.C. Whitney, for example. Now, take Cuba, where you see a lot of older Detroit heavy metal that look really great from a distance, and as you get closer, you notice they're not quite as stock as they seem. Most of these cars have seen 60 years without any original part replacement. All they had was a bunch of machinists and mechanics duct taping and chicken wiring things together. And if you lift up the hood on any one of these cars, you'll see exactly what I mean. Now, just to prove the point that being a classic car lover never really goes out of your blood, sometimes when I'm riding around with Expat Eddie, we'll see a nice old classic car parked in a driveway or at a gas station, and Eddie will pull over and poke around at the car. And nearly always, someone will walk over and say, "How much you give me for it?" And again, I'm talking about classic cars that have been kind of pasted together, being maybe a 60 on 100 point scale or even less. A hobbyist's dream if you got time, money, and a garage, if you restore it to stock like a first world person would do. Now, for example, about 5 or 6 months ago, we were driving in the boonies in Honduras and we saw an old Packard in a farmer's driveway. Now, this thing was pretty rough, but it actually ran. And the guy, seeing that we were gringos and figuring the car probably was collectible, or maybe we were just stupid gringos looking for transportation, who knows? Anyway, he said, "Give me $3,500 and you can have it." And Eddie said, "I wouldn't give you $15." And the guy said, "Okay, I'll take it." Which again reinforces the point that it's a haggler's world down here, and seeing that it didn't take 5 seconds to get the guy down to less than half. Now the thing is, Eddie knew that it would take easy 5 to 10 grand to restore this thing to being cherry. But he also knew that just scavenging this thing for parts, the engine, the block, the transmission, the transaxle, and drivetrain, he could easily make 5 or 10 grand just selling it for parts. It was a Packard, you know. But that takes work too. And getting it out of there, bringing it to another country, storing it, breaking out the parts and putting it on the internet and all that entails, well, in the end, Eddie made the right decision and said, "Who's got time for that? What was I thinking?" And I agreed with him. I said, "Look, Eddie, if you part that thing out, that's a lot of work, and so what? You make a little money. But if you restore it, it's even worse because there's no place to drive a car like that down here in Latin America. What with all those tumulos, those giant unmarked speed bumps, remember? And those man-sized potholes. So in the end, it's only a parade car, and it's going to sit in your garage all year. And the only road it's ever going to see is the road on the way to the car club meetings. So yes, you can find nice, cheap, classic cars down here, some of them in pretty good condition. Since there's no snow and ice, they don't put salt on the roads, so there's not a huge rust problem. And remember, these days you can get all original replacement parts right off the internet, so you can restore any classic car to like new. And since labor's so dirt cheap down here, the stuff that you can't do yourself, like the upholstery, re-chroming parts, and the paint job, well, Latins are absolute experts at that kind of stuff, at about a fifth of the first world price. And if you don't mind it sitting in your garage 99.9% of the time, well, then enjoy. Now, moving on, I'd like to read an excerpt from an article sent to me by a loyal listener who I think wants to remain anonymous. Anyway, you're going to like this. Now, this has to do with what we're all concerned with, our assets and our money and safe places to keep those things, and of course what people are doing in other countries, namely what wealthy locals are doing with their assets in Latin countries. The title of this report is "Farmers Hoard Food to Protect from Currency Collapse." This is from April 29th, 2013, Now, for all of you guys who listen to Doug Casey, and I'm a huge follower of his myself, please pay attention to this carefully. Now, as you might know, he's bought something like 1,500 acres in the northwest area of Argentina to set up his own self-sustaining colony or village, attracting many like-minded libertarian folks like him. It's first world all the way with luxury housing and a golf course and spas and all that. And they're farming their own organic produce and growing grapes for wine. Very cool, right? And for what it's worth, I agree with about 90 to 95% of what he says and does. I'm all on board on what he says about gold and silver and commodities and the imminent crash of the world financial system. For all those reasons, you guys already know. And the part I have to disagree with him about is living in Argentina. So let me get on with this report, and you'll see why. It starts by saying, which asset is more secure than money in the bank? The answer is simple. It's the asset that will still have value when the money or the bank collapses. All over the world, when people have been faced with the prospect of having their savings wiped out or confiscated, they've turned to hard assets, physical goods they could hold in their possession and trade if necessary, as protection. Argentina, a country that's no stranger to economic hard times and hyperinflation, gives us a prime example of what becomes money when the system collapses. Argentina, now at an inflation rate of 25% or more, while their currency loses significant purchasing power, Argentines have made a mad rush into gold, silver, and other tangible goods that retain their barter value. Like many Greeks who have headed to the countryside to grow their own food in the midst of a complete economic destruction, farmers in Argentina are now hoarding the one tangible investment they know will not lose value no matter what their currency does. With world food demand on the rise, growers in the Argentina Pampas grain belt are filling their silos with soy rather than converting their soy crops into pesos. The Argentine peso is a currency that hit a new all-time low in the informal trade this week. Considering Argentina's high inflation, clocked at about 25% by private economists, to farmers who've been so hurt by this, they say money in the bank is not as secure as storing their soybeans in silos next to their fields. And I quote here, "We're going to hang on to our soy. One can see higher prices ahead," said Jose Plazibat, who along with his partners farms 3,000 hectares, about 7,500 acres, near the town of Chuquibucó in Buenos Aires province. And the article goes on to say, "With Argentina's currency in meltdown and food demand around the world rising, farmers understand where the real value comes from. Their food can't be lost in the stock market, its intrinsic worth cannot be vaporized in a banking collapse, and they do not need to wait for anyone to deliver it to them. They hold it in their own personal possession." The article states that Argentina again is going through the classic stages of economic collapse. First, it was currency control, and now the government has seized all private pensions. So there's this week's analysis of what's going on in Argentina right now. And for all of you who have been sending me emails asking me about Uruguay and Chile, just let me mention that Chile is now more expensive than the United States. And believe it or not, it's one country in Latin America where everything seems to work. You know, you flip a switch and the light actually goes on. The electric power never goes out. And the street sweepers and the garbage men actually keep the place clean. And guess what? It's the only Latin American country where the police will actually fine you if you take a leak on the side of the road. If they can catch you. And the cops are less inclined to ask for a bribe than any other Latin country, too. So in fact, Chile is like a much more expensive, more organized version of the rest of Latin America. And it's much less corrupt, but you're going to pay for it. So if you've got first world money, go on down. You'll love it. Except for the fact that Big Brother is growing by leaps and bounds. And unfortunately, that's another irony of Latin America. As soon as a country becomes more organized and less chaotic, everyone and everything, including government tax collections, become more efficient. And when that happens, government becomes more organized and more Big Brother-like and takes off like a cancer. And what that tells us expats and expat wannabes is that where we prefer to be is where the society is chaotic and the government is small and corrupt, with a lot of people working off the books. Because in countries where government is small and disorganized, we expats and gringos can really flourish. Even if they have a ton of laws on their books, like first world countries do, there's just no possible way they can enforce them. Now, getting back to Doug Casey again. Now, the reason I bring him up occasionally is because I get emails from people saying, but Doug Casey says this, and Doug Casey says that, which is fine because I've been following him for 25 or 30 years too. And maybe if I had a couple million bucks, maybe I'd build a house right next door to his. But the problem is, you see, Argentina's government is so lopsided and top-heavy, with Big Brother so out of control. Doug Casey and his rich buddies up in that northwest corner of Argentina are going to be sitting ducks when the government comes around and tries to milk them for all they can get. And even though their little wealthy enclave could be totally self-sufficient in almost everything, the one thing they don't have is an army or a militia to stand firm when the government comes for their assets. And they just might. In fact, let me just read you something from an interview with Doug Casey that happened just about 3 weeks ago. Now, the question put to him was this: what are the first steps to take to internationalize your life? And Casey answered, first, you've got to get out of the U.S., and second, you have to open a bank account or brokerage account in some other country. Any country you like spending time in and has reasonable banking laws where you are not a cow to be milked. And then he says, this is getting harder and harder for people with U.S. passports. Political diversification is even more important than investment diversification at this point. And then the interviewer asks, is it better to build a house on the beach in Thailand or Costa Rica? And Casey says, personally, I wouldn't pick Costa Rica these days because it's totally overrun with gringos and way too expensive. And then he talks about Uruguay. The questioner says, Doug, would you say that Costa Rica is more expensive than Uruguay? And Doug Casey says, nothing is more expensive than Uruguay now. I think Uruguay is about 3 times as expensive as Argentina and 50% more expensive than the U.S. Uruguay is no bargain. Now, did you get that? He said Uruguay is 3 times as expensive as Argentina and at least 50% more expensive than the U.S. So listen, all you guys out there, quit sending me emails asking me about Uruguay, Chile, and Argentina. Because unless your retirement income or your pension will kick out $100,000 a year for you, forget about going down there and hoping to live like a first world person. You got it? And now an update on my June Latin American seminar. It's more than half filled now, so if you want to grab one of the remaining spots, just go to expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin American seminar link and get the details.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.